everyone. Welcome to the NESG Radio. In commemoration of the International Women's Day this year, 2025, we'll be speaking to the theme, Accelerate Action. And here with me are speakers of esteemed value. Today's podcast will be highlighting NESG's efforts in driving systemic change and accelerating action for women's equality, focusing on three key areas. We'll be looking at the workforce management, we'll be looking at gender policy and legislative advocacy. So basically, the whole essence of this is to delve into practical solutions for advancing gender inclusion in economic and policy frameworks, providing valuable insights for policymakers, corporate leaders, young professionals, and stakeholders committed to gender equality and Nigeria's socio-economic transformation. So the speakers we meet today are Bemi Ibrahim, Head of Workforce Management. We also have Kemi Omole, Gender and Inclusion Lead, Policy Innovation Center. We have Khadija Akewushola, SEBA lead at the Eneshonikon Center for Legislative Reforms and Economic Development. And you have Yewande Olubukun as your moderator today. Thank you. Okay, so here with me today, we have Bemi Ibrahim, Head of Workforce Management at the Nigerian Economic Studies Group. Good morning, ma. Good to have you here today.
Thank you, Yewande. Good morning, everyone.
So, to you now, we'll be taking the first question, and we'll be looking at, basically, women continue to face barriers in career advancement. What would you say are specific actions that the NESG has taken to accelerate gender parity in leadership and workforce participation? Particularly, I know you have been in this business, in this game for so many years now. So I also expect that you kind of give us insight into probably one of your experiences, maybe like a case study, if possible. So can you please help us understand how women, what specific actions NESG has taken to accelerate gender parity in leadership and workforce participation? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Yewande. At the NESG, inclusion is an intentional act for us. In fact, it guides everything we do. And I would say even for other organizations, any organization at all that would like to accelerate inclusion, gender inclusion specifically, they need to be intentional about it. They need to be guided by data and also be structured in their approach towards it. So right from when we talk of employee cycle or people cycle, it starts from hiring, from recruitment. You know, when you have your strategy documented, the next thing is strategy will not implement itself. You need people. And when you are analyzing your people, if you have your skill in-house, at the NESG, we are intentional about ensuring that there is a balance, male and female. And in cases where we need to hire, we then ensure that there is no bias. You know, there's something we call unconscious bias. Everybody, one way or the other, is biased. Most professionals are biased. Most organizations are biased. We can't help it. Why? Because we are from different backgrounds. We are from different work environments. And we find ourselves working together, having to fulfill a mission, right? Or an objective or set of objectives. But at the NESG, we intentionally, you know, speak to unconscious bias. We ensure that people are aware of the biases. So in hiring decision, we are very conscious. Whether it's male or female, we speak to the group. If the female is qualified, we bring the female on board. And we also monitor our numbers to ensure that there is some form of balance. Not that we have 90% male and then 10% women. No. From time to time, when we are doing our analysis, we will look at how are we doing? How are we doing? How is it guiding, you know, some other decisions that we're making, you know, in the near future? So to start from hiring, yes. we sort out unconscious bias, we sensitize our people from time to time on it. Sometimes on one-on-one cases, and sometimes in group conversations. So unconscious bias, not just in inclusion matters, but even, you know, in day-to-day matters. Another way that at the NESG we are conscious of gender balance is ensuring that opportunity is central for all. We close opportunity gaps, you know, for both genders, both male and female, or any gender at all, any gender at all. Yeah, and like I mentioned earlier, it's an intentional habit, and you see us consciously, even when we are drafting programs, when we are drafting agenda, attaching people to it. Oh, okay, this should be handled by a man. Okay, this should be handled by a female. Oh, okay, we have a list. Oh, this gender, we only have two, and we already have 10 in the other. Okay, let there be a balance. Okay, but people that are qualified, because when discussing the issue of bias, sometimes we are running away from bias and we run into another bias. So we do a lot of awareness on unconscious bias. Also at the NESG, we offer flexible workplace policies. From time to time, we update our policies to ensure that it still caters, you know, to and for our people. Our policies are such that it accommodates hybrid model. We know what the life of a woman is, you know, especially by nature, by design, by how God has designed a woman to be. At certain age, a woman, in most places or most cultures, we get pregnant, you have a baby. For the body to come back to place, you know, we try to ensure that we have policies that accommodate, you know, some natural designs. And also, like I said, when talking of gender inclusion and balance, it's not just for the female gender, even the male as well. So in our policies, you see we have even provision for paternity as well, not just maternity. You know, we have what we call parental leave, you know, such that it covers both parents. And also some caregiving support we offer, just ensure that the workplace policies are sort of accommodating enough. So we review it from time to time. We also have provision in our policies for women returning to work after any form of break. Our policy, and like I said, when talking about gender, I like to have a balance, because if we are not careful, we'll be running away from one bias and entering into another one if we are not careful. So in all our policies, there is a balance. It's intentional and we are conscious about it. Also in our performance management, it's as much as we can, we are bias-free. We are bias-free. It's not because you have of a particular gender or not. You know, we address even the issue of unconscious bias in performance reviews and in making some decisions. Thank you, Yewande.
Thank you very much, Bimi, for that very detailed, you know, response, because that kind of fed into actually the next question I wanted to ask you, which had to do with integrating gender inclusive policies in its workforce and development programs, but you've pretty much already spoken to that. So one more question. What barriers do you think prevent more women from rising to senior leadership positions? And how do you suggest or agree that organizations can accelerate progress?
Barriers?
Yes, preventing women from rising to senior leadership positions. And how can organizations accelerate progress?
Okay, starting from what I had mentioned earlier, which is unconscious bias. Certain biases push women to a corner. And in most cases, it's unconscious, even to from the angle where it is coming from. They didn't know they are doing what is not right. They didn't know they are doing what is affecting another human being. Right. So when we say we sensitize our people on unconscious bias, intentionally we train, intentionally we have certain, we leverage technology, we have certain subscriptions that our people have access to, you know, just to sensitize them in this direction. So when we can, we minimize that in the workplace, we've broken certain barriers to growth. Another barrier that I will mention is skill level. you know, and what I would describe as conditioning of the mind when certain women think tech is not their space, and something, I picked when I reach a particular grade level at work, I've picked. Number one barriers is unconscious bias. So what we do at the NESG is we sensitize our people to reduce the effect of unconscious bias on women, especially in the workplace. Another one is skill level. So in our training plan, in our training and development program for staff, we ensure that we give everybody equal opportunity, regardless of your gender, whether you're male or female. There's a clear career path for you, which of course you're a part of it. We cannot design a career path of you in your absence. You're a part of it. And then in training you to becoming that which we would envisage you to become, you're a part of it. So even if it is technology inclined, we push you into that direction with your own understanding as well, or agreement, knowledge. So in the area of knowledge, knowledge also limits women in rising. Another thing is sponsorship, lack of a sponsor, which that word that I mentioned as conscious bias has covered one way or the other. When people are on tables where decisions are made and there is nobody to push, we need a woman in this role. Oh yes, a man has been heading this for long. Nothing says, if we get a qualified woman, she will do it. Let's even have a change. Let's do this, let's do that. So we need this. Sponsorship is also important, which we are also pushing and advocating to say that if it's even better when it is woman to woman. If a woman is in that room, in that boardroom, push, advocate for you to have another woman, for you to grow from two women to three women, from three women to four women. So all these things still comes to sensitizing, still comes to advocating, because there is a place of mentorship, there's a place of sponsorship, there's also a place of availing them opportunities, you know. But even if you open the door, if they are not ready skill-wise, what can you do? Because there's also a place of evaluation. You can't just continue to push people that are not ready. But what we've had in the past has shown us that mentorship has helped, sensitization has helped, because women are more like preparing themselves and taking up the challenge, such that when there is an open door, they ensure that they fit in properly and they do their job, they perform optimally, you know, as expected. And in fact, we are taking the thinking to a level where we are saying that there shouldn't be any barrier. There shouldn't be any barrier anymore. You know, societal expectation could also be a barrier. The one that thinks women should carry babies, and there is a minimum number of babies that you should carry, and you should be married at a particular age, that you should, you know, societal standards can also be a barrier. But the work of the advocacy is to sensitize people, to shift them from thinking in a particular way into another manner of thinking that will help them better. You know, that will help them thrive, that will help them, you know, succeed better. So societal expectations too could be a barrier, you know, and that is what mentorship covers. When we attach a woman to another woman, or even to a man, we even bring men into this discussion. Like I've mentioned when I started this conversation, we shouldn't be running from one bias and enter into the another one. So even men should be a part of this conversation, so that even as they are sensitized as well, sponsorship even becomes even more, easier. Sponsorship becomes easier when the other gender, you know, when they are carried along as well. Thank you, Yewande.
Thank you very much, Bini. Just the last bit, if you were to talk to like the young ones coming, you know, the new set of people, younger generation, and what would be like a take home, like one line today that you want them to actually take into like consideration?
I would say that regardless of your gender, you should aim for the best in life. And that nothing should limit you except yourself. If you are not limiting yourself, nothing at all should hold you back. All you need to do is do your proper analysis. Set your goals, clear goals, do your analysis. Okay, how do I attain these goals? okay? And if there seems to be any limitation, anything that seems like a barrier on your way, do your research, begin to set out on that journey, you know, to crush the barrier. And if an environment is holding you down, please, that means you've outgrown that environment, move to the next one. Because you cannot continue to wear a cloth that you've outgrown. So if you want to fly, and the environment is not allowing you to fly, that is a message to you. The universe is telling you to move, keep on moving.
Thank you so much, Benny. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right. To our next speaker, Kemi. Kemi Omole from the Policy Innovation Center. Earlier, Bimi had mentioned something regarding a mentorship and sponsorship programs. So I would like to find out from you, like, how can mentorship and sponsorship programs be strengthened to accelerate career growth for women?
All right. Thank you so much, Shiwande. I think it is so critical. At the Policy Innovation Center, we are presently... We just finished some work around women in economic leadership, and what we found out how critical, you know, many times when we hear about mentorship, like she had mentioned, we think it's overflogged, but it's so critical for women to be able to rise in their career, because you cannot become what you cannot see. And what mentorship does for you is that it becomes like, it creates like a pathway for you to know how to move. And for mentorship programs to be successful, we have to have, first of all, let's be data-driven, so that whatever is structured is really speaking to the needs of the people we are developing the mentorship for. So it might be that, so one thing that we saw when we were doing that work was that a lot of women, when they get to the reproductive ages, we are within that 30 to 40, a lot of women slow down in their career. And this is also a very critical age when a lot of people in management see them, and then they are being, you know, picked for things around promotion. And what we see is that many people, for example, when they give birth, they don't know how to navigate back into the system. But if they have back into their career, so that's where you see them falling off. But if they are mentored, who have walked that path, who can then like hold them to some level, then we can see that they will thrive. So mentorship is so key. We can't even begin to, you know, so key.
Thank you so much, Kemi. So now, mentorship is really key. So now to your second question. It is now 30 years post Beijing declaration, you know, and then we're talking about the progress on women's rights. While some will say progress on women's rights has been slow, you know, others will have like opposing views and all of all that. But I would really like to find out from you, what are some of the most pressing gender-related policy gaps in Nigeria, and how can they be urgently addressed?
All right. Thank you so much for your question. So, we know Nigeria, we have very good policies. However, one major challenge I personally have seen with policy, and we've seen as well, is poor implementation, whereby we don't have, you have lovely policies, but when you now go about on to see what has been done on this policy, we see that it's redundant. So that's one of the major challenges. And one of the drivers of this has to do with issues around capacity. So, of course, there you have the policy, but do people who the policy, who have to drive the policy, do they even understand what the policy is about? Do they have the skill set to drive this gender-related policy? So, for example, we have the National Gender Policy. We have the Violence Against Person Prohibition Act. And these are very policy that if we're able to implement, a lot of the conversations that we're having about gender inequity will not be, you know, in place. In the National Gender Policy, we have the, you know, affirmative action, which recommends 35% representation of women in leadership. So the people who can help us drive it, do they understand the strategies? Do they know what to do? The people with the political will, understand the concept. So that's the first thing. Then another thing I would also say is having maybe poor monitoring and evaluation processes. Do we have very great monitoring processes that help us know what progress have we made, you know, to know the progress we've made, what benefit have we gotten from that progress? So because I believe that everybody likes progress, but everybody can like progress that they can measure and see its impact. Yeah, so these are some of the key challenges that we've seen with gender-related policies in the country.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kenny, for that. So the last question, I know if you like going back to as far back as 2018, I had advocated for, you know, we're talking about the Child Bride Act and all that. And while I was at the parliament, as ECOWAS parliament, I had spoken to them about the fact that I didn't see it being okay with a 10-year-old child being eligible to be married off, you know, a bride. Yet, a 10-year-old child did not have the eligibility to like vote and all that. And it's interesting to know that on the whole, like the whole panel on that, like everybody discussing the fate of like the African or Nigerian girl child, you know, the child bride issue and all that, there was not even one woman, you know, to decide the fate of like the, so it kind of like showed poor representation. But I think it is interesting, you know, these days we're seeing more women, you know, being represented, you know, even in the House of like Representatives, you know, and people like you that are experts in like this field, you know, talking about it and all that. So I think it's really interesting. And somehow, yes, the success or the progress may be slow, but I guess progress is progress.
Yeah. So
how is the Policy Innovation Center working with policymakers to accelerate gender inclusive and economic policies in Nigeria?
All right, thank you so much, Yuande, and well done also for the work you are doing in this ecosystem. So yes, the Policy Innovation Center, we really are so, this is our heart, it's part of our approaches. We use gender transformative approaches as well as behavioral insight approaches. So when it comes to how we are able, our strategy to ensuring that engaging policymakers, you know, to accelerate gender inclusive related policies, one of the things that we do is that we provide technical support relating to policy development. So for example, we are presently providing technical support for the domestication and implementation of the Women Economic Empowerment Policy in Lagos State. And what this basically means is that we are supporting them to develop a policy and a roadmap, as well as coming up with strategies, helping them in terms of engaging the critical stakeholders on how to ensure that this policy does not just die after it's been developed, but is working. We've also, for example, supported the Edo State government. We help to integrate gender and social inclusion into the digital policy, just to ensure that no one is left behind in this digital transformation effort. So these are some of the things that we've done around that technical support, around the technical support we have provided. Also, we have the Gender and Inclusion Summit, which is one of the largest, if not the largest platform on gender and inclusion in the country. And what we've done is that we ensure that we engage policymakers as well as other stakeholders, you know, ranging from private sector leaders, CSOs, development partners, you know, to just foster gender responsive discussion around governance and economic inclusion. And how we do this is that we ensure that we have policy dialogues, you know, issues around case studies, knowledge sharing session, to ensure that, you know, to support the government in providing the knowledge to help them make informed policies as well around gender. Another thing that we do well, and so far we've trained close to 400 participants, is that we understand that while you may have a very good policy, if there are issues around capacity gaps, you can't really drive those policies. So we run a gender and development course right now, and so far we've supported different government agencies in driving this. For example, we supported the training in terms of gender. I think Kano State Primary Healthcare Development Agency you know, in just trying to help them understand how they can be more gender inclusive in their operations as well. So capacity building is something we have provided in our relation with policymakers, and of course evidence generation, you know, which we are very big on. We ensure that we make evidence available so that policymakers can make support in helping them make more informed decisions while they're doing great works. When evidence is available, they can even make better informed decisions. And that was what we were able to. So the work we did together with the NESG, whereby we were able to do like a gender analysis of the mining sector, which was very, very useful information. And we're very glad now that I know the mining sector have developed a gender strategy for that ecosystem. So yeah, so these are some of the things that we do, you know, to ensure that policymakers can do the great work they're already doing, but even do it better and more seamlessly.
Thank you so much, Kenny. So to our third speaker, Khadijat Akewushola, I would like to know what, we understand already that legal frameworks are essential for gender equality. So can you enlighten us on how the Eneshonikon Center is advocating for policy and legislative reforms to accelerate progress for women in Nigeria?
Okay, thank you, Yewande, and thank you to all the previous speakers. It was really insightful listening to you. So at the Eneshonikon Center, we work on legislative framework and regulatory policies. We understand the importance of gender equality and equity in our work, specifically because this framework, we already have like sound framework, just like Kemi said, that provide for this equality. The only problem we have, or the major problem we have, is implementation. So the foundational law in Nigeria, for example, the constitution, already provided for equality under the human rights provision. Everybody have the right to life, to no discrimination based on gender, based on sex. So, but at the same time, when it comes to implementation, there's been a challenge. We have the Child Rights Act that is still yet to be implemented across all states. We have the Violence Against Persons Prevention Act, VAP, that is still yet to be implemented across all states. So at the Eneshonikon Center, we are playing an active role in first proposing legislations that go into addressing this gender gap. Second, also supporting the implementation of this legislation. And this was what led to the establishment of our State Assembly Business Environment Roundtable, because we wanted to go beyond what was happening on the national stage. We wanted to go to the point where we also support the subnational in implementing these laws, in domesticating these laws, and in having like an harmonized provision that protects everybody at all level of government. And thirdly, we also support the monitoring and evaluation of both the national laws and the international treaties. We've been part of conversation, roundtable discussion, and even engagements that's tend to where we assessed Nigeria's participation or Nigeria's level of progress when it comes to implementing bilateral treaties and international treaties that provide for the rights of women and children. So recently we're part of an engagement on assessing the level of implementation of the Maputo Protocol in Nigeria. So these are some of the things we are doing that in order to ensure that legislations and policies are gender sensitive, in the sense that it takes into consideration gender equity in the process of it. We also pay attention to female participation in governance. For example, we were recently part of a gender strategy and policy review for the National Assembly, in which we're looking at the role of the importance of female being part of the National Assembly, being part of the legislative body at all levels. So these are some of the things that we do, supporting national and state legislatures to ensure that laws that are past are paying attention that there are laws that have taken into consideration different gender equality, gender equity, and the need for women participation in all level of government in order to promote economic development.
Thank you so much for the comprehensive response, Khadija. So to my second question, because you know, you had mentioned challenges, particularly with like implementation and all that. And some would argue that usually when there are challenges, those challenges can be seen as opportunities, you know, because it kind of like, you know, there are gaps. So it's like indicating, okay, there's a gap here, so there's an opportunity to fill that gap. So with that in mind, what legal and institutional barriers would you say still hinder gender equity? And what steps should be taken to overcome them? That's your own opinion now.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ewande. That's a very great question. So yes, there are still legal and institutional barriers. And to start with, I would say that the first is the weak enforcement of these gender laws. So we have a lot of advocacy that go on the national level. These laws are passed, but when it comes to implementation of this law, there's no momentum to implement it as much as they want to pass it. So we have laws that are already in existence. We have human rights, gender rights that have been acknowledged by legislation. But when it comes to implementation, there's a very weak enforcement of these gender laws. So this is one of the biggest challenges that we are having when it comes to like gender policy and gender legislations in Nigeria. I think also the conflicting legal system can also pose as a challenge. So you would understand that Nigeria runs like a multiple legal system. There's a customary law, there are religious law, there's the national common law. So because of that, people tend to, it tends to be difficult to or to implement these statutory laws in a situation where there are still considerations to religious provision, customary provision. So even in the process of implementing, there are challenges like, oh, that is how it is done in our culture, or this is the religious provision. So you're saying that 18 years is the legal age for consent to marry, and somebody is saying, no, but in my religion, you can do it this way. So, and as a result, I think that leads me to my third challenge, which is that because these lawmakers or these implementers are majorly politicians that ride on people's validation of what they do, they're usually very careful not to offend. So like there's a challenge that, oh, you don't want to offend institution so that it doesn't politically go against you. So a lot of time when people want to implement, you see pressure. So you see like there's a lot of pressure from various side, and as a result you just see that there's low implementation. So these are like some of the challenge that we've had. Like there's also like underrepresentation in politics, because when we talk about whether these laws will represent women or not, we need to even think about whether women are even on this table where these laws are being deliberated or where these policies are being deliberated. You can't expect somebody to represent you in your absence. So not until women are fully represented in politics, there will always be a challenge as to their inclusion in these policies and legislation. There's the issue of economic resources, definitely. And the issue of economic resources is a product of the gaps. If women have limited access to education, if women have limited, if women are meant to, are made to marry so early, definitely it will lead to a gap in economic resource allocation, because they don't have the freedom and the opportunities that their male counterparts have. So definitely there will be that challenge. So yes, these are some of the challenges. How can it be fixed? Definitely is to accelerate the legal reforms. Like we need to go beyond, oh, they've passed these laws. Yes, we celebrate that it has been passed, but we need to go beyond passing. We need to hold government accountable for implementation of laws. So when we are assisting in designing policies, when we are assisting in designing laws, it goes beyond just getting that laws passed. the aim of it at the end of the day is to see that law make an impact in the society. And it can't make an impact from the shelf of the library. It has to be implemented. So yes, we need to get accelerate legal reforms that implement these laws, domesticate these international treaties that we've signed, plenty international treaties that will say, oh, we promote women's rights in Nigeria. We need to domesticate it and actually implement. There's also a need to strengthen institutional capacity. And I think that's one of the impressive things that Kemi mentioned that PIC was doing, because it's important to have capacity building that actually goes into, everybody needs to understand their role in promoting gender equality. So it's important that we drive this inclusive approach to it. Let everybody play a part in it. Let us support both the national and subnational in implementing it. And let us actually push for laws mandating the recognition of women and actually implementing those laws. So those are the few solutions that I think we can adopt to solve this challenge.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Khadija. It's interesting that you went back to what I had spoken earlier when I was talking about the child bride bill and all of that, and then female representation basically and all of all that. So in order for us to actually get that change, what I'm getting from you is we have to equally have men having these conversations, or them equally being in the room, have women, that's the female representation as well, them equally being in the room and seeing how best to resolve these issues. Thank you so much for that very valuable insights. So if you were to take home one line today, what would it be?
Okay, so I think my take home line would be that whenever we are asked to work in the for gender equality, we should understand that we're not just doing this for ourselves, we're doing it for generations to come, like our generation. So whatever laws we're passing now, whatever laws we're implementing now, they are like we're doing it for people that are coming our own generation. So it is important that we understand that the fact that we can move freely today is due to the fight of some people in the past who have actually fought for what we are now enjoying today. So we must be deliberate about making sure that we are also driving policy and laws that goes to ensure that people, the more we age, the more there's freedom for women, there's economic inclusion for women. So we should be deliberate about making sure that we're doing things that generations to come will be proud of what we've done.
Yes, and they'll enjoy. Yes, thank you so much. It's nice, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because you know Bemi had earlier stated something around being intentional, you know, intentionality. So in all the decisions we are making, we have to have it at the back of our minds that we are making these decisions for the greater good of the generations even yet unborn, you know, and all of that. Thank you so much, Khadija. So Kemi, to you, what would you want us to take home today? Just a one line, like just one line that you really want to be stuck in like our hearts today. Thank you.
Okay. So we need to address limiting gender norms. I will just stop there. Yeah.
All right. All right. So thank you so much, all our speakers. It has been a truly valuable and insightful discussion, you know, around gender equity and, you know, accelerating action and all of that. Thank you so much for your time, you know. Thank you so much for like your well of wisdom, which we have basically drank from, you know, today. So thanks for joining us on this special episode. And on that note, to listen to previous episodes, please visit nesgroup.org/podcast. Thank you so much, and do have a splendid day. Bye.